Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, The Bird Show.
I made a big mistake last night.
Uh-oh.
Big sleep mistake last night.
I was wondering why you were texting us at almost 10.
I was last night, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Y'all were getting texts?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't in that group chat.
No, you weren't. It was all about you. We were all talking so much crap about you.
It had nothing to do with you and everything you missed out on, and just be thankful.
Man, that's too much honesty. The mistake I made last night was, you know, I've been telling you guys that I am teaching my 15-year-old how to drive, and I am determined to do a better job with this son than I did with my first son.
Oh, that's so typical of like, oh, I got to learn all my mistakes from the first. That
For
way
sure.
I don't screw up the second.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 100% the truth. Anyway, so we've been doing a lot of day driving, and my son is a really good driver. He's a confident driver. He has his head on a swivel, all that. He's really, really good, right? But he's been getting nervous about driving at night and also in the rain, right? And you should be.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. As a first-time driver.
Especially in this city.
So last night around 7:45, 8 o'clock, after we got done watching Mean Girls. Yeah, yeah. We all watched it. The whole family watched Mean Girls last night.
So you've watched Parent Trap and Mean Girls?
Still haven't finished Parent Trap.
Okay.
But anyway, so as I'm going up to bed, it's like 8 o'clock, and that's when I start winding down. I realize sun's going down, and it's drizzling outside. Yo, boy, get your keys!
Oh, look at you.
So we go out, and we drive in the dark and with it drizzling outside, which he did really, really great at. But any parent knows that any first-time situation that you put your kids in driving where you are the passenger, it is so freaking stressful for you as a parent. I mean, I felt like I was pressing down on a brake that wasn't in front of me. I felt like, you know, those grips on top that you're supposed, I don't really know what you're supposed to use these grips for. You never really do. On the passenger side, up top on the roof of the car.
Yeah.
Hand clothes. That's all I've ever seen.
That's in the back seat. Well, yeah. I use it to put my dry cleaning.
Yeah. Y'all don't grab the OS handles?
Never.
Oh my God, I'm hanging on to them all the time. No. When we go around like sharp curves or whatever, I'm like gripping that.
I think it's to help people get into the car.
Is that what
so
it
as,
is?
Like, yeah, if it's a higher car or if you're somebody who is older, you can grab onto that and like pull yourself into the car.
Well, I never use those unless I'm with my kids that I'm teaching them how to drive. And then I get out of the car and I realize I'm so stressed, I can't straighten out my fingers because I'm gripping so tight on that thing. So we get out of the car and he goes downstairs, goes to bed, right? My adrenaline is pumping. I can't go to sleep. So I don't think I got to bed till like 1 o'clock last night.
Oh, no.
And that's why I was texting you guys at 10.
Yeah, that makes sense now. Because I woke up this morning and I was like, he texted at 10.
I just couldn't shake it, man.
I looked at the time like, what?
All right, Audrey, how are you?
I'm good.
All right, Audrey was telling us a couple of minutes ago that she was all set to get married. This was 5 years ago. She had been engaged and seen a dude for 2 years. I have those figures right, correct?
Yes.
And then about a month before the wedding, the former fiance says, I'm too young to get married. It's over. And that was it. Relationship done. He takes off. You guys break up, correct?
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And you haven't spoken to him since?
No.
Enter new dude. You are now in love. You are engaged as well. Your wedding date is set for when?
We haven't set an official date, but it'll probably be within the year.
Okay. Yeah, I feel you there. I've said that a million times. All right. So you're engaged and you're having sort of like these emotional flashbacks anytime you plan anything that you really want closure from the last engagement before you move forward with your new man.
Yeah, I do.
All right. I think I got it all in there to recap you guys that weren't listening earlier. Tommy, our show director, reached out to your ex, and he can take it from here.
Yep. We're going to call him Paul, and I texted him. I told him who the Burt Show is and explained what closure call is, and his response was, sounds weird, but okay. So why are you contacting me? And I said, I'm sure you remember your former fiance, Audrey. And he said, of course. I haven't talked to her in a long time, though. And I said, yeah, I know. Well, she's actually engaged again and getting ready to tie the knot. And Paul said, good for her. What does that have to do with me?
Yeah, that would be very off-putting if I received a text just letting me know my ex was engaged. And I probably would have cut off all conversation with you at that point.
So guys handle that, I think, differently than women do.
I did not handle it well.
Yeah. Like most guys I know, when they hear that news, it's like it's like not a big deal for them. But the women that I know in my world that have gotten that news kind of like rocks their world a little bit.
Yeah, I wouldn't think nothing of it if I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not you. Go on.
All right. So in response to Audrey's pending wedding, he said, good for her. What does that have to do with me? And I said, well, she's feeling really nervous and anxious about it because of how her last engagement ended. And he goes, oh, sorry, I guess. Why is she nervous? Different guy, different circumstances.
He has a point.
Mm-hmm. And I said, I guess that's the problem. She doesn't really understand what the circumstances were. Without knowing what happened between the two of you, she has no way of knowing if things will be different this time. And Paul said, well, that sounds a bit dramatic. She'll be fine, I'm sure. And I said, I am sure she will be, but we'd like to reassure her and help get her some answers. You might even call it closure. She just really needs to hear your side of the story. Paul said she has nothing to worry about, had nothing to do with her. And I said, well, it had to have something to do with her. You broke up with her a month before walking down the aisle. Ding. Audrey genuinely wants to learn and grow from her past experiences. If you could provide some honest insights, it would mean a lot to her. And Paul said, look.
Oh, you know when you get a look, you're about to...
Yeah, he's standing. Yep. Here comes the lecture.
Look, you can let Audrey know that it really had nothing to do with her. I never wanted to get married. Not then, not now. I've known deep down that marriage wasn't right for me since I was young. But at the time, I felt pressured by everyone, society, friends, family, even Audrey. And I said, so you still have no plans to get married? And he said, nope, not at all. I said, then why did you even propose to her? And he said, like I said, pressure. And I said, so there's nothing she did then and nothing she would need to do differently now. And he said, nothing and nothing. I said, cool. I guess that's a legitimate reason. We'll let her know. I'm sure she will feel better hearing that. And he said, glad I could help. And I said, thanks for being honest. See you.
All right, Audrey, after hearing all that and that exchange, how you feeling?
My heart is pounding. I guess there's definitely a bit of relief. There's still a part of me that's like, there has to be something, like something that really like pushed it to that point.
No, don't overthink it.
No,
he's giving you every answer you want right now. Don't try to read between the lines.
Yeah, like, I mean, Audrey, he felt pressured to propose, like he said. Like, he's explained everything. And sometimes you get caught up and you just keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper to the point you're like, I can't get out of this. I can't get out of this. I can't get out of this. Until that one, like a month out, it really became real. And he knew this is what he wanted to do. And that's why he flaked and he left. So I don't think you have to do any more digging. This is a dude that's not opposed to you, just opposed to marriage.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
It's a great answer for you. I mean, it literally had nothing to do with you.
Now, don't go back to your new fiance and then every day go, you sure you're ready to get married?
Yeah.
the next day, you still sure you're ready to get married? That's in the past, man, and it had nothing to do with you. That was him. You got a brand new life. Go enjoy it.
All right.
That sounds hopeful. Congratulations.
Congrats. Yay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate you guys.
All right, Audrey. Good luck.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
They Bye. Always seemed so disappointed,
I know,
even
right?
when they get like the best possible outcome.
100%.
Right.
Can't get any better than that. Yeah. Gotta read between the lines. Hey, The Bird Show. So Cassie's going through a little stress right now. It's that season for you.
Tis the season. Bathing suit season.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little trip to the beach this past weekend, and about 2 days beforehand, I realized, oh, your girl doesn't have any bathing suits, which is kind of a key piece. I made the decision a very long time ago to not let my weight or how I felt about my body stop me from living life, and especially doing things with my children. I want to craft good memories with them, and they're not going to remember how I looked. They're going to remember what we did together.
Reach.
So I'm not going to sit, and cover-ups are fine and stuff, but I'm not going to stop myself from doing things with them because of what I'm wearing. But that doesn't make the swimming suit shopping process any less daunting.
Curious dude question. So is this anxiety there every season, no matter what your weight is?
For me, it's only if I have to go shopping. So if I already have a suit and I know I've liked it and I've bought it and I feel okay in it, then I'm not going to have anxiety over wearing it again because I know how the suit performs, mm-hmm. so to speak. But when I have to go find a suit because I've gained weight, I have to be like, oh God, is there going to be one that fits everything? Is it going to fit my boobs? How is it going to look in it? Like this whole thing. And then it's trying it on. You get hot and sweaty and it just is, ugh. It just sucks.
And we've talked about the lighting in dressing rooms before, how they're really not very friendly.
The whole
thing's a miserable experience.
Yeah, right.
It is. But thank God for plus size stores because some of them are installing fans in the changing rooms, like Torrid, so you can have a nice cooling breeze when you get hot, because they know their clientele gets hot really easily, all right? So I went to Torrid for the shopping experience. If you're unfamiliar, it's a plus-size store that carry, I think, size, like, I want to say 12 up to 30 or something like that.
Is this a national chain?
It is a national chain. It is specifically for plus-size people, those sizing. And so I'm like, my best bet is going to be there. Like, I know something is going to fit from there, regardless of how it looks. I just need a suit that fits because I've gained a lot of weight. I haven't bought a swimsuit since before I had my first child. So I've had to, I've gained probably like 70 pounds throughout that whole process. My body looks very different because of the pregnancies and how it separated my abs and also just weight gain in general. So I'm not looking forward to it. I am the heaviest I've ever been. And I also don't really like my body right now. I'm just not used to it. So I went in, I picked out some suits, and I'm like, you know what? We're going to go big or go home. I got a black one piece, but I'm like, let's get some hot pink. We're going to do a two piece. We're going to do like, it looked like a circus tent full of bright colors. I'm like, bring it all. Paige and Cassie to the big top. Let's try it all on, right? Because I'm like, I deserve to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Despite my body, I deserve to exist. I deserve to be there, have fun with everybody else. And that means I can wear bright colors just like everybody else. I don't need to hide my body, even if I don't like it right now.
I love your mindset going into this. And
thanks.
I feel like anybody that does struggle with their body acceptance, that's the kind of pep talk you need to give yourself before going into a dressing room to try on swimsuits.
Really?
Yeah.
God, sucks being a woman sometimes.
Yeah, but that's what you said is key phrasing. So I used to be all about body positivity, love your body. Yeah. And lately I've shifted into body acceptance. Doesn't mean you have to like your body. It just means you have to accept it as is and what it can do for you and what it has done for you.
Body neutrality is a big thing right now.
Yes, love it so much. Still am a fan of body positivity, mm-hmm. but body neutrality is just easier. You are a person. You're allowed to exist. Everybody looks different. So I try these on and I try the circus top suit on and I'm like, it's cute, but I definitely feel like I'm about to be doing some Dumbo style tricks. So I'm going to toss this one. And then I try it on a pink two piece, hot pink. And I was like, damn, I like this. I look good. I'm going to buy a two piece. Heaviest I've ever been, 250 pounds. Let's stick it in there. And I looked good. I bought a black one piece and I walked out of that changing room and I was like, this was the least painful swimsuit shopping experience I ever had. I did not cry. I did one little negative thought popped up, and I said, "Shut up, Clarice," because okay. I renamed my negative thought Clarice.
Oh, good.
It just came out better than Veronica. "Shut up, Clarice." And I bought the suits, and I walked out of there being like, what has changed? And it was because I've been working on my body acceptance. And so when I was able to look in the mirror and be like, I don't love it, but I don't hate it. It is what it is. I just need some suits. This is a very clinical process. Give me the seats. I feel great in these. Let's go. And then I did. And it was just so nice. And also this whole time, too, in the back of my head was the thought, like, this is no longer just about me. My daughter is going to see how I treat my body. Mm-hmm. She's going to see what I say about it and the things I say about it, whether I hide it or display it. She's going to take all of that in and soak it in. And that really forced me also to step up to the plate and be like, what message do I want to send her about how she treats her body? I need to start embodying that myself. And it was just so freaking nice to have a non-traumatic bathing suit process.
Beautiful.
Even though I'm the heaviest I've ever been.
I am so happy for you. I think this message needs to be spread near and wide and far. I also wanted to ask, like, your message to your daughter, which I think is really important, but also for you, has your relationship with your body changed since giving birth to two children and knowing what your body is capable of doing? Do you look at your body differently now?
I do, but not in a positive way.
Oh,
it
okay.
has, sorry. It has, no, okay. it, that does help pull me out of funks
yeah.
when I'm down about it, but it definitely is a new body to get used to, and I'm still going up that curve. But my point is that's on body acceptance yep. and just doing the work, putting in the work, and it works, I'm here to tell you.
Hey, The Bird Show. Hey, The Bird Show.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's The Bird Show's entertainment buzz.
The controversial Bama Rush Talk doc comes out today. Every year on TikTok, people get pumped to see the next round of recruits getting ready for Bama sorority recruitment. The girls come on TikTok. They share their outfits. They talk about their trials, their tribulations, the sweating, the makeup, the jewelry. There's a whole Rush Talk? You've never been on Rush Talk?
Mm-mm.
I have not.
Is it? Why is it just
the
why
reaction?
Is it,
I love well, it. Well, because it's. I mean, it's this huge phenomenon. That's why mm-hmm. this documentary has even happened. Is that it? Literally takes over for like 2 weeks. It's just blonde sorority girls talking about going through recruitment.
And it's just Alabama they're focusing on? Why is their Rush like more hardcore than other schools?
I would say Bama is definitely like the top tier sorority experience. When you think of like the crazy Animal House, like cutthroat recruitment process, like Bama, like I went to Florida. Florida's an SEC school and it was cutthroat, but like Bama's on a different level.
Really?
Yes. Greek life in the South is like Greek life on steroids.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, so it's gotten to be such a huge phenomenon that there's now even a documentary on it.
We're getting ready to rush. Like, look at all the people already starting to line up.
The University of Alabama is the top sorority recruitment in all of the country. Rush consists of four highly competitive rounds.
Let's be honest, I probably would not be going to Alabama if it did not blow up on TikTok.
I'm nervous.
So just to give you an idea, if you hadn't gone through the process, because I did Greek life at the University of Kentucky. So if I, but it was a hot minute ago. But Abby, I know you recently did Greek life at Florida, correct?
Almost a decade ago, which is wild. Yeah. It doesn't feel that long ago.
So like the way Rush goes, you go through a first round. You get to visit all the houses, right? And you put down your preferences. And then the houses decide who they want to invite back. So the next day you get your sheet and you know which houses invited you back.
So it's like a cut list for all the houses?
Every single day. And then you end with your top three, like the three you pref, right? These are the three you pref. You go to those three houses and then you go into this room and you put your top choice and you just hope and pray that that top choice picked you. And then that's how you find out which sorority you got into. We had to wear all white that day. And then you also meet your big sister. And so this is a person that's going to guide you through your first year of sorority life. Like you actually, we stood in a circle with candles and all the bigs were walking around us. And then your big sister blew out your candle, and that's how you knew who your big sis was.
What sorority were you in?
I was 80 Pi. I was a Delta Zeta. Go Turtles. So we have go fighting turtles.
We were lions.
So we have our interns in the studio with us today. So what have people in, I feel so old saying this, what have people in your generation been saying?
You're interviewing the interns.
I'm interviewing the interns.
As the elder. Okay.
Well, because we asked our interns, like, what are you guys talking about? And like a majority of our interns said they're talking about this Bama Rush documentary that's coming out today. So like, what's captured you?
So I actually go to Auburn. So I'm right next to Alabama, and I have a lot of friends who go through the Bama Rush process, and I went through Rush myself at Auburn, and it's just interesting to see how they're going to portray Greek life, I want to say, is what mostly me and my friends are talking about, because there is good sororities do, but there is also a lot of bad.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what makes a sorority bad?
The hazing, for example, can be bad, and then like the girls can be very mean. Like I personally had a very mean girl experience in my sorority. So it really depends on which sorority you're in, if it's like one of the considered top tier ones or like mid tier or mm-hmm. all that, and the ranking system and connotations that go along with it.
The ranking system?
Yes.
What is that?
So like there's like the top houses, which are like in the documentary, they say it's like the prettiest girls, like all that.
And who does the ranking? Is this a Sports Illustrated thing?
The fraternities.
The fraternities.
Yeah.
So the men are ranking the sororities.
Yes.
And wow. to be specifically clear, there's not like a list somewhere that the University of Alabama posts like these are the top tier sororities. It's very much like a word of mouth thing. Like, mm-hmm. oh, I want to be a KD because this pageant girl was a KD and she's cool. So I want to be like her.
And the top 25 doesn't change week to week like football.
No, okay. Absolutely not. Well, that's why recruitment's such a big deal for sororities, because everyone's so cutthroat about getting the quote-unquote best girls, and that's what determines the word-of-mouth rankings.
What's the worst case of hazing in a sorority you guys have ever heard of?
Death.
Death?
That's pretty bad.
Death.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. How'd that one happen?
It wasn't at my school in particular, but like he overdosed and like on like alcoholism, like they made him, like
drinking so much.
Wow. I think fraternities have a bigger issue with hazing than sororities. I can say from my perspective, when hazing didn't exist, like there was no hazing.
Yeah, it didn't happen in my chapter at all.
No,
we like just painted things and made arts and crafts.
Same. Oh my God, the bubble letters and the paint pens. Oh, I have nightmares about the paint pens.
But this is next level.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. For the hazing for guys, it's all just alcohol related. But for the girls, it's just like so manipulative. And it's like, I don't know, it's almost just like mind control. These girls trying to have like authority over these other ones. My girlfriend's in a sorority. And I'll tell you, just... I get the inside scoop, you know.
So don't get her in trouble. Don't get her kicked out.
I'm not saying nothing. I'll tell you, it's just bizarre things that go on. They got a thing called honor board. It's basically if you get seen doing anything in public, you can just get like in trouble for it. It's bizarre. I don't know. I get to see a little bit of just how crazy all that stuff is.
I was constantly on restriction because, you know, my grades weren't that stellar.
I was too.
My freshman year.
Yeah, I was too.
Well, these ones don't sound so bad, though. What you're saying is in your girlfriend's sorority, if she's out doing stupid stuff, she's representing the sorority, mm-hmm. so she gets pegged for that. You're saying, I shouldn't say the word pegged. she gets pinged for that. You're saying if your grades aren't up, the sorority's like, hey, we got, you're part of the sorority. So that doesn't sound so awful to me.
No, it wasn't. Also, I was late paying dues a couple times because, you know, TGI Fridays wasn't like pulling what I thought I would. And I also got put on restriction for that. So.
But that's how some mean girl situations can happen. So like if I have a nemesis in a sorority and I'm out dancing on a table somewhere, snap a little photo, send it into standards. And that's how rifts can start.
Standards. I know.
Oh, see, my best friend was the head of our what we call J-board. So I was invincible.
Oh, you got lucky with
that. Yeah. Shout out to my girl, Virginia.
I am having flashbacks now because I remember having, like, you had to go down in the basement and stand in front of the standards board, and they had to sit there and tell you, like, what your GPA is or how late you were in your dues or what you did while you were out that got you in trouble, and then you got your punishment.
So it's so super interesting to me as we become more PC and more careful about safety when it comes to mental health and like that. You guys are saying the game is it's next level in some of these sororities now.
Absolutely.
Like, you could throw all that stuff out the window.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what me and my friends are talking about, because I go to HBCU, and like I think this documentary is portraying it as just an SEC school thing. This is across the board, mm-hmm. colleges all across the nation, and like I'm just really interested to see like the comparison. Like, there's a lot of similarities between the Divine Nine and how it's running at these other institutions.
So interesting.
Well, I know the Divine Nine's really secretive, so how do you feel about this possibly getting exposed?
It's going to be interesting.
Well, I cannot wait to watch it. It's going to be so entertaining.
And what are the Divine Nine, just for those that don't know?
Like the specific ones?
I don't even think people know that it's associated with.
It's Alpha Kappa, a.k.a. Alpha Kappa Alpha, Kappa Alpha Psi, Omega Psi Phi.
They're historically.
Yes, historically black colleges and universities, all their various fraternity sororities.
The UK courts just made a major decision against Prince Harry. I'll have more for you on your next e-buzz on The Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
Are we going to get into this inadvertent insult?
I knew you were going to do that.
Are we just going to let that one go and keep that one
Abby,
off the air?
Welcome to The Burt Show. I can't believe I'm about to get in trouble with my sorority post-grad. I did not mean this.
So we just had a very fascinating conversation about the new Bama Rush documentary that's coming out. You said it's on HBO Max?
It's on HBO Max. If you have not gone down the rabbit hole that is Bama Rush talk, oh my gosh, you're going to be fascinated by the sorority recruitment process at the University of Alabama. It's
so
crazy.
Abby and I are sitting in here riffing about like recruitment and Rush, and as we were, you know, going through as pledges, but then when we were in the sorority and we were trying to, you know, recruit and, you know, certain preffers and stuff like that. And so,
you say preffers or heifers?
Preffers.
They were not.
And we're just comparing, you know, we're just sharing old sorority war stories, right?
Yeah.
And then, what did you say, Abby?
So, Kristen was bragging about the fact that she was a first string recruiter. So sorority recruitment's like this whole process where sometimes they put the chattiest Kathys in the first string of girls who get to talk to the girls we want the most. Kristen was a first stringer. I was like a fifth stringer. They did not want me out on the court. And so they're like, well, she's going to reveal too much. And so I was joking. That sometimes there are certain jobs that girls would get put in.
No. Say it like you said it.
No. Because think about the girls who did this job at my sorority. They're going to think I'm calling them something that I did not mean.
This is what Bert does.
Sometimes we would, and I'm only saying this because I was one of these girls. So this is not coming from a place of like anger or judgment.
This is not how it played out at studio
at all.
Okay, Mo, you say what she said.
No. Sometimes there would be certain jobs that we would give girls if we didn't want them to recruit. And I jokingly, because all the girls in my sorority were hot, we were a hot sorority, we would put certain girls in certain positions and they would be like
aesthetically pleasing.
It was a third string job. And so to be clear, I was a fifth string, so these girls were above me, where we would put those girls so they wouldn't recruit.
At where?
At the piano.
Kristen, where did they put you?
I also played piano for my sorority.
Oops.
I was one of the unfortunate looking souls that dabbled the keys and played piano for my sorority during Rush.
At least you were on the floor. I was in a closet somewhere.
I took no offense, by the way, whatsoever. It was very, very funny.
All right, the email says...
You love making people uncomfortable, don't you?
Yeah. Myself included.
I bet.
All right, so the email subject line says, dibs before death. Kristen's got the email.
Burt Show crew, I am a newish listener out west. Found you guys on Facebook and have been listening to your podcast ever since. That makes you happy, doesn't it, Cassie? You keep me company on our family farm, and I appreciate it, and that's why I'm coming to you today. It all has to do with our family farm. My mom and dad own almost 1,000 acres of pristine land in South Dakota. It's passed on from generation to generation. Eventually, it'll be passed down to me, my brother, and my sister. My parents are out of town on a much-needed vacation, so my brother's sister and I are holding everything down. One morning, I overheard the two of them arguing about what to do with the land. Not a petty argument, but a full-blown fight. They each have already plotted exactly what they want to do with the land in order to make the biggest buck. It honestly was gross to listen to them bicker about land that isn't even theirs yet. It came across so cold and callous. I am disgusted by my brother and sister's behavior and don't know if I should tell my parents. I know. That would make me a 20-something-year-old tattletale, but I feel like they should both learn a lesson about greed.
My parents are in their late 50s and are in perfect health. There is absolutely no reason to be having these conversations right now. I'm the youngest, yet Phil, I'm the most mature when it comes to this situation. Thanks for listening and any advice you can offer, Anonymous.
Parents are only in their late 50s and the kids are already jockeying for the land, man. I don't know how you can tell your parents without looking like a knack and without looking like you're trying to maneuver your way into the first position. You know what I'm saying?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Like, if you tell, it's going to definitely look like you're trying to get a better foot up on your siblings. Yeah. So I feel like you got to handle it by talking to them. I don't think you go to the parents.
So, like, if you overheard about your sisters, like, bickering about something that your family owns and who's going to get it and what they're going to do with it, you would try to set them straight. You wouldn't tell your mom or dad?
Yeah, I couldn't see myself taking that to my parents because I think my parents would look at me like, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what you're doing? So it would look bad on me. Yeah. So now I would talk to them.
I don't think it's bad to bring it up. Just be like, hey, we were having a little conversation about who's getting the family land after.
Oh, hell no.
Set the record straight. But not just because I like to stir the pot.
My kids came to me and said, hey, Dad.
Yeah.
No, you're in your mid-50s and all, but we're just thinking about when you're dead.
Yeah.
What are you going to give each of us?
Uh-huh.
I'd say, everything is going to Burt's Big Adventure. Everything. It's the Burt Show.
The Burt Show.
Should be proud of your kid. You absolutely should be. And that's why we're really super glad that you called yesterday and called our first Burt Show Kindness Award hotline, right? Because a lot of times, as we've been focusing on, like, the big award is that one, like, perfect attendance. And nowadays, we're just in a time where maybe we got to rethink that one. Like, maybe that shouldn't be the highest award because we're forcing our kids out of the house when they're not feeling great. Maybe mentally they do need a day, but they've got that 100% attendance on their mind. So we might be sending them into situations that aren't really healthy. So a listener or Cassie had suggested, how about the kindness awards?
Yeah, it's actually Mary Fairy Beauberry on Twitter, and she says, can we please replace the perfect attendance awards with kind kids awards already? And I love the message that that's sending, that the focus should be on not being at school every single day, but rather being the kindest kid you can be at school when you were there.
I love that. So call 404-954-1360, or you could just go right to theburtshow.com and nominate from there, and we'll start today.
Yay!
We will start with Joseph Morales, who is 14 years old from Alpharetta. He is a student at Holcomb Bridge Middle School, nominated by Karina Morales.
I would like to nominate my son, Joseph Morales. My name is Karina Mema. He is in middle school, and he is just known for being really, really kind. All of his teachers always send me emails about he's always just so polite and so courteous, always willing to help, and always just being super, super nice to everyone. Also, he has made honor band twice this year, and he's already made it into the wind ensemble to be able to play in Milton this coming up year, and he's only graduating from eighth grade. So we're very, very proud of him for just being such a kind soul.
All right, the next winner of our Burt Show Kindness Award is going to Danica Camarena Corral. She's 8 from Mableton, a student at Mableton Elementary, and was nominated by her dad, Mike.
I'd like to nominate Danica Camarena Corral from Mableton Elementary Jaguars. She is kind, sweet, giving. She's always helping and loving her fellow classmates and very kind at home. And what a pleasure to be around her. So I nominate her for the Kindness Award.
Our next kid is Tucker. We don't have a last name, but he's 10 years old and he's out in Villa Rica and he goes to Ithaca Elementary School and he was nominated by his neighbor. I love this. Oh. Sarah Hitchcock.
Hi, my name is Sarah and I'm calling to nominate Tucker. Tucker is a 10-year-old boy who lives in my neighborhood. He is the oldest boy and he's surrounded by a bunch of 2-, 3-, and 4-year-olds. Tucker always is super kind and helpful with the little kids, always willing to play and participate in games outside with them. They all look up to him and love sharing his big boy toys. He even showed my son this weekend how to play a little bit of Minecraft and just was so patient and kind. And that takes a lot for a 10-year-old kid because it's a lot on a parent. And he excels in school. He's great with baseball and he's good with his mom.
And then the last kindness award, just for this round, because you can still do it, is going to be Cameron, who is 18 from Oklahoma City, just graduated from City West High School in OKC, nominated by mom, Sarah.
I wanted to nominate my daughter, Cameron, for the Kindness Award. Cameron is one of the nicest kids you could ever meet. She did a donation Friday last year for a leadership project with Marching Band, and it was all about collecting things for a homeless teenage shelter here in Oklahoma City. She collected a whole bunch of toiletries and clothing and money. It took two vehicles full of stuff to get it all taken over there. She is a kid who, if she sees a freshman boy with not very many friends, she will go and invite them to sit with her and her friends if they're verified.
All right, so you could still nominate a kid for the Kindness Awards. All you got to do is call 404-951-1360. You can nominate your kid there. If you can't remember that number, no worries. You just go to thebertshow.com. And like you heard there, if you can hear The Bert Show in your city, you're part of our family here. So it can be in any city. Just go ahead and nominate a kid. These kids need to be highlighted, man. I mean, you hear so much, right? This is going on in school. That's going on in school. Well, those are the stories that make the headlines, but how about the kids that are playing with the other 3 and 4 or 5 year old kids in the neighborhood?
Teaching them how to play Minecraft.
Teaching them how to play Minecraft and stuff like that. That doesn't make the headlines, but they should be rewarded for that. And again, being kind is way more important than that perfect attendance, right? So if you know a kid that you think will qualify for the Kindness Award, hit them up at thebertshow.com.
You're on The Bert Show.
All right, Abby, today the class of 2023 benefits from your wisdom. It's commencement speech week.
It is. I went yesterday, and by me, I mean the AI. I literally went to ChatGPT and said, please write me a commencement speech for the class of 2023. And all things considered, it wasn't that bad.
It didn't suck.
It was a lot of cliches.
it was a lot of cliches. And Cassie and I confessed to this after the show yesterday that Kristen, when she has homework assignments, puts her all into it, like we all do. Mm-hmm. But she's very, very thoughtful, chooses her words, and there's always a very specific message when she does these. So yesterday, when she was reading off her commencement speech, I was kind of feeling like, this is just a whole bunch of cliches kind of strung together. She must have found out about this last minute, but didn't say anything.
Yeah, it felt really meaningful, but lacked the personality and depth that you usually bring. And I'm like, this isn't bad. It's just, it doesn't feel quite right. Like pants that are slightly too tight. You're like, this isn't wrong, but it's not right.
Like it was for the graduating class at Vanilla University.
Hey, don't knock Vanilla. I am glad to know that you expect more from me and that I trump AI. So thank you very much for that.
You absolutely do.
For now.
For now. Right. Anyway, yes, until they get it like smarter and smarter.
But does Abby?
Yes, that is the question. And I will do like a legit one later this week, but behind the scenes, it was like a last minute homework assignment. Felt like it deserved a little more, you know, time and attention. So today, Abby is going to deliver her words of wisdom to the class of 2023, whether that be a kindergarten class, eighth graders graduating, high school seniors, or even college grads.
Because Abby herself just graduated from high school like last year.
Yesterday, actually. Yes, I came straight from high school to this job.
Wait.
So I was thinking back to my commencement, and I had James Patterson as my speaker. I know, award-winning, like best-selling author, James Patterson.
Was that like some hoity-toity private school or something?
University of Florida, go Gators, baby. I don't know how we got him, but I remember sitting in my graduation chair looking up and going, I am never going to reach that level of success. And so I thought I would come to the graduates a little bit more realistic. I would come to them with a commencement speech that would tell them to set their expectations low so they could only be they could only be surprised post-grad, right? Because James Patterson was at my graduation being like, you can do whatever you want. You can even be me. And I was like, no, 99% of us are just going to go be accountants, like 9 to 5 or like live a great life, but we're not going to be James Patterson.
We got to put on the schedule tomorrow for listeners to call up and tell us who their disappointing commencement speaker was.
I have no idea who mine was.
I think mine was Anderson Cooper.
Okay. What? Yeah. Wow. Dang.
What school was that?
ODU, Old Dominion.
Damn.
Dang.
What'd you have?
Paul Farmer. He is a huge name in public health. Sadly passed away, but he has his foundation and does a lot of work in Africa with infectious disease.
Well, damn.
I have no idea.
I think ours was like a local news anchor.
Oh.
Mine was like some 4-star general that worked at the Pentagon, but Renee's my wife's Coretta Scott King.
What the heck?
Wow.
Wow. It was amazing.
I could beat all of that. We had a second speaker, Bill Nye, the science guy.
Oh. Shut up.
Boom.
Damn.
Yeah, that's a winner there. So, yeah, I would definitely be like several steps lower than that with the speech that I have brought to you today to remind you that mediocrity is okay. Ladies and gentlemen, esteemed faculty, parents, and graduates, I stand before you today with a heavy heart and absolutely no inspiration to share. I want to congratulate each and every one of you on making it through what was perhaps the most mundane, perhaps the most unremarkable chapter of your lives. Yes, that's right. I'm talking about your time in school. Now I could stand here and tell you to chase your passions, but we all know that's just a load of nonsense. Instead, I implore you to settle. Settle for that dead-end job that pays the bills but slowly sucks away your soul. Settle for that toxic relationship because, hey, at least someone's willing to put up with you. Settle for a life of unfulfilled dreams and unmet expectations. As you embark on this treacherous journey called adulthood, remember that life is not a fairy tale. There are no magical genies granting wishes or glass slippers that will lead you to your happily ever after. No, life is a brutal and relentless march towards the grave. So my dear graduates, I leave you with this. Mm-hmm. Embrace mediocrity, accept the monotony, and succumb to the soul-crushing reality that awaits you. And remember, in this journey called life, the destination is ultimately irrelevant because we all end up in the same place in the end. Congratulations, class of 2023. May your lives be as lackluster as this commencement speech.
I would expect nothing else.
Yeah. Inspiring.
From a gator.
What is so funny is that commitment speech is the complete opposite of your personality.
It really is.
But I live in worst case scenario land. So here's my thing. If I'm setting them up for mediocrity,
yes,
they can only expect good things to come, right?
Set the bar low.
Yeah. Set the bar low.
And if they take, this is brilliant. Because if they do take your advice and they settle on mediocrity, that will always leave you, Abby, on top.
Boom. Better than James Patterson, baby.
You're on The Burt Show.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's The Burt Show's entertainment buzz.
This has just been a really hard week for Prince Harry and Meghan. Not only did they just have that catastrophic... do we even know if it was catastrophic yet? We don't really have evidence, but...
They said near catastrophic.
Near catastrophic, yeah. Car chase in New York City. Prince Harry just lost a legal battle in the United Kingdom. So the United Kingdom just ruled against him regarding his security when visiting the UK. A while back, he wanted to pay United Kingdom police privately for security when he was visiting the country, and that was denied, and his lawyers were like, can you look at that again? Can we just make sure that that's the ruling you want to have? And they were like, yep, we're 100% positive.
I don't trust honestly, this is not me not joking here. If I'm him and I really want to be secure in that country, because all the politics and all the nonsense with conspiracy theories, who knows if they're true or not, I am hiring my own private security. I am not going through UK police.
I kind of get where he's coming from in the sense that, like, I mean, I know he stepped down, so he's not really an employee, if you will.
Not a working royal.
And so he's thinking, well, I was born into this. I didn't really choose this. So the country, I feel like, has a responsibility to do this and to protect me and my family. But according to the BBC, this was sort of like the government's way of saying, if you're wealthy, like, you can't just pay for private security via our police. You got to do that on your own. So that's why it was essentially shut down, not once, but twice.
Well, I mean, don't our United States presidents, after their presidency, they have security detail for the rest of their lives, right?
They sure do. That's supplied by the government,
yeah,
right?
The Secret Service. So I would imagine, even though he's no longer a working royal, because he was a member of the royal family, I mean, come on. They are just tabloid fodder. And it's obvious that they get... chased and I don't want to say attacked, but you know what I'm talking about. That they deserve to have some kind of security.
So it's an interesting question if you try to equate it to the United States. So if a sitting president quits,
yeah,
just decides, you know, this whole president thing, it's a little more stressful than I thought it was going to be. So I'm just going to bail on the whole situation. So after a year or so, does he continue to get government-funded security, or does he have to hire his own private one?
That's interesting. I don't know.
I don't know.
They have to, I'm sure it's somewhere in like the bylaws.
I feel like once you become president for any amount of time, it would seem as if they have to honor it because you're going to still be as famous as even if you quit.
Right? You would think once you're elected, then it doesn't matter if you quit, you still get it. I don't know.
That's interesting.
Now, Nixon didn't quit, but he got kicked out. So, okay, I'm going to see.
I'm pretty sure he continued to get security.
I would think so.
Yeah. Well, it kind of sucks because, I mean, to be fair, like Prince Harry didn't really have a whole choice in the whole being born royal thing, but he did have a choice in whether or not he wanted to stick around. And to be fair, I mean, I don't really know what like rules and things you're expected to do as a royal, but couldn't he have just like chilled? You know what I mean? Like, couldn't he have just stepped back and just done the bare minimum?
He couldn't, right?
So according to Wikipedia, the fun fact I found out about Secret Service protection, on January 10th, 2013, President Barack Obama signed the former President's Protection Act of 2012, reinstating lifetime security service protection for his predecessor, George W. Bush, himself, and all subsequent presidents. Richard Nixon relinquished his own Secret Service protection in 1985, the only president to do so.
Wow. He relinquished it. So he said, look, I don't want it.
It's kind of interesting.
Okay. Don't tune into this show for this kind of information.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, right? You want intelligence, you got to go down the dive.
We just gave you like a tablespoon of
this.
It
is not our brain.
Oh my gosh, look at us being like NPR. We're so smart.
So intelligent.
Okay, Croy Bierman says he wants ex Kim Zolciak to get a psych evaluation. So according to court documents obtained by People Magazine, Croy filed a motion for a psych eval for her. It reads, during the party's marriage, Zolciak presented very troubling behavior, which has accelerated in the months leading up to Bierman filing for divorce. And to be more specific, he's saying that Kim spent a ton of time and money gambling to the point of, quote, financial devastation, and that she's not taking care of the kids.
So Abby asked me off the air, like, hey, how do you want me to handle this Kim Croy thing? Because I've done business with them, and I'll tell you guys the same thing I told her. Look, I understand it's newsworthy and it's entertainment news and that's what we do. But as far as my involvement, because I'm close to it, you're not going to hear me say anything.
Okay, bye.
That's a first.
It's officially the Abby Show for the next 20 seconds.
I feel like there was a lot of discrepancy as to who filed first, if it was her or him. And didn't she also come after him wanting him to do some kind of like drug testing?
Yeah, so she's asking him to submit a 5-panel hair follicle drug screen, which basically means that while he's getting drug tested, he's not allowed to cut or shave his hair in any way. Mm. I've never been a part of that kind of drug test, but I would assume it's to make sure it's like being ultra safe that you're not doing the marijuana.
Well, no, because that stuff stays in your hair follicles. Like, if you do, like, a hard drug, that'll stay in your hair for a hot minute.
Okay.
5 years, I think.
Another question we got to Google, okay? So, if you're bald.
Yes.
And they want a hair test.
Oh.
For a drug test. Can they take hair from the rest of your body? Does it stay the same as your hair on your head?
Another interesting question.
And what if you are completely hairless? What is that called?
Like one of those cats. Like one of those Dr.
Evil alopecia?
Cats.
Alopecia is the one where people lose their hair.
Know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it may be conducted using head or body hair.
There you go.
Do you get to choose where they pick the hair?
I brought us back.
We're back on brand.
Yeah. This is a family show.
We can always count on you, Kristen.
You are welcome. For more stories, head to thebirdshow.com. Click eBuzz.
You're on The Bird Show.
So were the parents being D-bags in this whole situation? I mean, they're the ones that made all the money and stuff.
Oh, man. All right.
So why do the kids get to benefit on that on a trip across country?
This had the internet split, and I had to bring it to the Bird Show table. The caption says, was she wrong? Travel influencer gets slammed online after upgrading her and her husband's seats to business class, leaving her 10-year-old son in economy.
Yeah, that's something my parents would do.
Enjoy the biscuit!
So I follow Hollywood Unlocked and I saw this story with, by the way, the influencer and her husband cheersing a glass of champagne in this business class seat, right? And she said, POV, enjoying business class with my husband on a 13-hour flight while our 10-year-old sits in the back in economy class because he doesn't have United Premier 1K status like we do and didn't get a complimentary upgrade. She added, sorry, son, along with three crying laughing emojis. One person commented saying, y'all need parenting classes. The whole notion is wild. The other adult passengers on the plane are not your village in the event something catastrophic happens and you can't get to your child. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who are like, I would update me and my kid and leave my husband in economy. But yeah, so do you get bumped up mm-hmm. and leave your 10-year-old back in economy on a 13-hour flight?
The question here is, did I? And the answer is...
No, you didn't.
Indeed. So, mine's not as severe as this. But I did get bumped up to first class. I didn't pay for the tickets, but got bumped up. My kids at the time, I think, were 10 and 13. However, so... On Delta flights, you go first class and then you got Comfort Plus, yep. which is the one right next to that. So they got, I guess because of all the miles I have, they got bumped up also. So while I might have been in like 9 A and B, they were in 10 A and B. So that was me, the bathroom, and then them.
Oh, okay. Is that
just so right. It's not quite like all the way in the back of the plane. I could see them, but my ass was sitting in first class.
They had no eyes on their child.
Yeah, no, that might be a different situation. A totally different situation. And 10 to me as a little young to be all by yourself in the back of the plane.
That's what feels wrong about it to me. It's the age. I don't know what age. If it feels like I would feel a little better about it, like maybe 14, I don't think I would be as mad, but 10 feels like too young.
10 doesn't seem that young to me.
No?
And maybe it's because I can totally see my parents doing this, but I felt very, I mean, this I'm a long way past 10, but I don't know. At 10, I was pretty competent at, like, you know, being fine. Because if something catastrophic happens on a plane, like, it's already too late. You know what I mean? Like,
Who cares if you can see them?
Can't do nothing for you anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all going to the same place. So you'd rather your child, like, scream into the face of a stranger than have you hold them as the plane goes down.
Look, if this was my parents and me, I would have gotten more love from a stranger than I would have from my own parents.
You don't think if the plane is going down, someone's not going to let you go back to see your kid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's going to be a rough, I mean, if it's going down, how are you going to get back there?
It's
going
to be rough regardless. Yeah.
You got luggage just going all over the place. Go look at the first couple of scenes of Lost.
Dude, I would be so annoyed if I was stuck next to a 10-year-old and the parents took off, because now I feel like I'm responsible for this 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. Even though, like, legally I'm not. Anything the 10-year-old, you're asking someone else to be your kid's babysitter. If something happens, they're not nearby. There are creeps who travel on airplanes, and if they see an unattended minor, they will try to take advantage. You won't know if your kid's been dragged to the bathroom. And a woman had a child go missing on a plane. People took the kid. She was unconscious in the luggage compartment behind a suitcase.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't leave your kids unattended, and don't make other people parent your child. If you want to fly first class, either cough up the money to have your kid up there, or don't fly first class.
I disagree. I would like my last feelings to be of annoyance rather than complete and total terror. So if I have a 10-year-old child next to me that I don't know and I feel protective, I would rather that be my last feeling than terror of the plane going down.
Yeah, but if the plane, I'm not even talking if the plane's going down. I'm talking your kid chokes on a peanut and now I got to give the kid the Heimlich maneuver, which I would do to help out anyway. But now I got to monitor this. Who's that man the kid's going to the bathroom with? Is that his dad? I need to step in. Stop. I got my own kids. I don't need yours. I'm getting really annoyed right now. It's just really taking a turn. Yeah. Really,
yes. So the general sentiment was what? Split half? Half and half?
Yeah, it kind of was. Some people are like, he's 10, he's fine. And other people are like, you all deserve the worst parents of the world award. I think they should be allowed to, as long as there's no peanuts involved.
Yeah, that's fine.
No choking kids.
It's a Bird Show.
Thanks for listening. Get more Bird Show fix at thebirdshow.com or follow us on social media at The Bird Show.